Hey everybody, it's John Pollock.
And Wei Ting.
And we're from the Review Away podcast, but that's not what you're listening to right now.
You're listening to, or actually watching, the OSW Review.
Yeah.
Oh, lies, Ric Flair! Totally 1,000,000% untrue, do you understand that? Yeah, tainted her reputation, Elizabeth's reputation, you tainted it, yeah! And gave her 1,000,000% humiliation, Ric Flair. And for that, you will pay. Yeah, you will. You will pay, Ric Flair, in the Hoosier Dome at WrestleMania 8. You gotta understand that I will take it right to you, yeah. At the moment of truth, I will whoop you and beat you. You will face the truth, yeah!
You know something, Sid Justice? You and Whippleman, as demented as you are, brother, are not even gonna face the power of Hulkamania. This is where it all started, and this is where it's all gonna end. Right in WrestleMania with you, brother. You know, it's like history repeating itself, man. I remember when I was a little teeny Hulkster hanging out on Venice Beach, California. I heard the screams. I heard everybody panicking, running for their lives, coming out of water. And then as I started to dog paddle out past the buoys, I faced the killer head on, the killer shark. I bit him right between the dorsal fin. And as I was dog paddling, brother, back to get a pina colada at Trader Vic's, I realized I had an extra passenger. Just like Whippleman is sucked onto you, brother, the shark had a scavenger onto his belly to suck up all the trash and the slime and everything that he left behind. Well, you know something, brother? At WrestleMania, I'm going to face you head on, just like the killer shark. And you and that little scum Whippleman, you're going to be history at some garbage dump, brother, in Indianapolis. What you going to do when the Hulksters and my little maniacs backstroke on you?
Steve, at the end of the last show, oh, you've jinxed me, and you guys end the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So what if at the start of this, I'm still jinxed, and you have to unjinx me?
Yeah, I'll do that, yeah. I'll do the intro if you want.
Excellent.
I think I've got a pretty good impression of you. Hello! Jay.
Hello and welcome to OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast, filmed in glorious grapple vision and encoded with glass processing. We chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view. It's the HB boys. It's the Tangle Twister, Mr. OSC.
All right.
The Gully Bar, if you want.
Thanks.
And myself, the Golden Gay Time, Jay Hunter.
Is that a bar?
It's an Australian bar.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And only got more popular. Certain discos. It's WrestleMania 8, and it's coming up right now.
The number one contender, the Macho Man, Randy Savage. hypomaniacal Sid Justice goes one-on-one with the immortal Hulk Hogan in what could prove to be Hulk Hogan's farewell match. It's a double main event. It's WrestleMania.
Coliseum Home Video presents WrestleMania 8 from the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Greetings once again, Noggers. How's it going, lads?
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, no, I'm alright. Thanks.
Oh, sorry.
Big thank you to... We won't out him just in case other people hassle him, but... yeah, WrestleMania Revenge Tour last week, and, man, we have the best fans in the world. We scored free tickets.
Yeah, awesome. It was amazing. Thank you very much, mate.
Yeah, thank you. It was an experience. It was happening.
It's WrestleMania 8, April 5th, 1992, from the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis, Indiana. Attendance is a much larger crowd of 62,167. 15,000 didn't pay in, which was also the attendance of last year's Mania. The average ticket price being $26.60, roughly about half last year. 400,000 TVs tune in at home, same as last year. Announcers Gorilla Monsoon and Bobby Heenan.
I like the Saved by the Bell background while Vince is going through the cars. That was pretty cool.
Now, yes, we start the pay-per-view with Vince bellowing down the main matches to the classic WrestleMania theme. He plugs the double main event, aka no main event.
This entire card was changed around, so got some splaining to do there, but yeah.
And immediately Bobby Heenan gets on Gorilla's tits and he's like, don't start!
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light.
Reba McEntire, she yucks the national anthem.
Awful, by the way. The crowd booed her and the commentators have the cover for her. That's quite sad.
Shame they didn't bring in her non-union Mexican equivalent. Arriba McIntyre. I'll get my coat. So, our opening contest is Shawn Michaels versus Tito Santana. Yeah, so it's Chico El Matador, that Mexican lolly. And then we get...
He's so sexy. He's got the look. This rides the girls wild. Got the move.
Oh, Sean. It's like, oh, this is awesome. It's the Sherry version of Sexy Boy. So awesome.
Before you go off on this match, I just have one thing to say. Did you look at the ref? He looks like a Lego man. He's got the little kind of... Beatles monkeys do, you know, the kind of 1960s thing. And he's got a whopper mustache as well.
So this is the first singles pay-per-view match for the now heartbreak kid Shawn Michaels, who's now with Sherry. She left the Million Dollar Man. Yes. 9th February wrestling challenge on the funeral parlor. Sherry announced that she was in love with the now heel Shawn Michaels, and that Ted DiBiase said,
that's not very clever. His name is the Heartbreak Kid. It's not going to end well for you, Sherry, at all.
Maybe she believes she can change him.
Oh, God.
Not counting her time as Peggy Sue, Sherry had gone from managing Macho King Randy Savage to Ted DiBiase, so only like top level talent. And now she's given HBK the rub. It does seem like an odd fit because she must be a decade older than him. Mm. Yeah. Sean says that he didn't like it at first, but he came around to having her as a manager, getting her to change her outfits to match his new style, and posing after pushing her to the mat, and she liking it, and yeah. It's worth mentioning that it was Mr. Perfect that threw out the moniker, "He's a heartbreak kid, McMahon," on a random show, and Vince and Shawn liked it so much that they kept it.
Oh.
Tell you what they didn't keep was his catchphrase at the time, which was, "I don't think so."
Oh, Jesus.
You might be wondering about why it's Shawn Michaels versus Tito.
And not Shawn versus Marty?
Hmm.
What? No, because it's far too early for Marty to come back.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, give him time.
It's been, you know, 2.5 months, though.
Yeah. He's selling his injury, like.
I suppose it makes sense of how long he had to sell that trip over the guardrail. The blind man. Where's your boy, Marty? Do you want to guess?
Drugged up somewhere.
Accurate. He was arrested on cocaine possession and resisting arrest shortly after the Rumble, and the WWF fired him, so he's gone.
Oh, he's just flat out gone. Yep. Okay. God, yeah. Marty.
But this is probably the best thing that could have happened because... No, yeah.
The rest of his career might have an argument with that. Go on.
Because... when he does come back, you know, Shawn is the Intercontinental Champion. So then he can challenge Shawn for the title.
Yeah, that's true. Like, if he was going to face Shawn now, he'll just get reamed for a couple of months because they're putting over Shawn and establishing him. So it's good that the fodder was other people, not Marty. So Marty could come back in.
Yep, and it works out so well.
Yeah. The rest of his...
yeah, tons of comedy shtick. Heenan's blowing through his joke book. But Monsoon has a quite mean one. He was like talking to Sherry. Who does her makeup? Helen Keller? Very slow to start off. Tito is relentless with his side headlock.
He got Shawn in the headlock. Shawn does the spot where, you know, you push the guy into the ropes when you're in the headlock. And Tito's like, nah. He's like, yeah, makes sense. Why? Don't push me away. I'm just going to keep holding on. But he got a little bit over-familiar with the headlocks from then on.
Four in the space of, like, 2 minutes or something. Each one numbered here was too much.
Yeah.
Shawn sidesteps Santana and throws him to the outside, and we get a nice shot of Sherry's nip. Pill. Yeah, what do you think of her outfit, actually? She's bursting out of it.
Is this the kind of black dealy with the...
No, this is the white one. It was all white. A very nice night on the town outfit, so it's a bit cheaper. Bit of rough.
Yeah.
At the time, he was pushing for the patented side suplex.
Oh, God.
This heralds the flying jalapeno and the two brawl outside. You can see it's early in Shawn's singles career, and you can tell he hasn't quite adjusted to the very different single styles of wrestling, so as opposed to wrestling in the Rockers with the multiple tag team tandem offense. So it's a bit iffy, but give it time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he'll do fine.
Even Heenan says that HBK will be the star of the 90s. Little did he know how wrong he'd be when a certain Virgil got the ball.
So we get a lowly inverted atomic drop and Tito signals for the deadly donkey punch.
Or El Poncho del Burro.
Oh, that was your Spanish, wasn't it?
Nice to meet you too. Awful fucking messy finish here, where Tito can't keep Shawn up and falls over, and Shawn splashes him and gets the 3. So it's a finish usually reserved for bigger wrestlers, you know, that they can't hold him up and they bowl over. But yeah, even though the face might have gotten cheated, Gorilla asked to not see a replay. So I assume that's a fuck up immediately.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like anyway.
Shawn throws down Sherry into their winning pose. Nice.
Yeah, it's quite abusive. Like, I mean,
yeah.
That was the 80s. We're, you know, we're coming into the
taking a leaf out of Jake Roberts' book.
Trust me.
And Braille. Complain.
That's what wrestling needs. More Braille.
I thought it was really, really bad. I was kind of half thinking that Tito maybe was trying to keep the pace kind of gentle because it was Shawn's big WrestleMania debut as a singles wrestler, but Shawn's capable of so much more than this. He's really dragged down by Tito. At one point, Monsoon says on HBK's reverse chinlock on Tito, he's trying to slow Tito down. He couldn't go any slower. If he was going any slower, he'd be scooching on his arse backwards up the ramp.
So this is Tito Santana's 8th consecutive WrestleMania, but also his final pay-per-view payday. racking up an astonishing 22 pay-per-view appearances with how many losses?
20.
I'm going 18.
19 losses.
Whoa.
Tito would stick around off pay-per-view until the King of the Ring, 93.
The Matador gimmick was a lot worse than I remember it.
It was really bad, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was.
He's really bitter about that gimmick.
Is he?
Still, yeah. He thought it was a joke. And he felt it was like a personal thing against him.
And it was.
Pretty much was, yeah.
Quickly ushered to Mean Gene on a nice interview podium with LOD. With Paul Ellering. Who's that?
Oh, who's that?
So it was nice of him to explain.
I have returned! I am the Bad Apple! It was Need that first brought the Legion of Doom together! It was a bit.
Nobody knew who this guy was, clearly. He kind of seemed a little bit heelish in comparison to LOD, and maybe that's because they were heels when he was managing them previously.
He says he's their original manager and he's back for revenge.
And he's like, I'm the reason the Legion of Doom are together, but I'm not the reason that they're deadly. That's all them. It's like, what a stupid promo, mate.
And it's at this point, but where are your titles? You don't have the tag titles anymore.
I mean, do they really need this guy? They were doing really well as it was, and why bring him in just because you lost the titles? Just win them back.
These are still face, right?
Yeah.
Because I just see tag teams having a manager as a real heel move. You know, if you're super face and you're two beasts like these, like, you don't need a guy telling you what to do, you know? Like, you just don't sell and win. And that's it.
Yeah, the fact that you had to ask if they were still face means that they did a bad job, yeah. And they're not gelling. Because, yeah, he did seem very boring heel promo here.
Yeah.
And I've never seen LOD so unenthusiastic. It's like someone took their coke away. Throw to a pre-recorded promo with Jake Roberts, hosted by Sean Mooney.
Mooney opens up by asking Jake Roberts, are you bringing your snake with you? Pissed myself off. And Jake basically says that the smartest man wins and not the biggest and not the most powerful. Good stuff. Also, sorry, is Jake now face? Because this was quite the face promo.
No.
Okay. And also, fucking Macho Man, what happened?
This will all unfold throughout the night. Lord Alfred Hayes is secluded in the Hoosier Dome cellar with Paul Bearer and The Undertaker. The dead man says this Sunday will enter the 11th hour. 7 p.m. So, yeah, a face turn for Taker and a match with Jake. The fuck's that? Saturday night's main event, February 8th, Jake and Macho had what was to be their blow-off match. Jake waited backstage with a chair afterwards. He wanted to hit whomever comes through the curtain first. As it happens, it was gonna be Liz. But out of nowhere, The Undertaker stops and grabs the chair of a stunned Jake. So Macho fends him off and, yeah, how about that? When confronted by Jake on the funeral parlour, the dead man is asked, whose side are you on? To which he answers,
mine.
Not yours.
Announcing and cementing his face turn. An angered Jake trapped Taker's hand in the casket and DDT'd Bearer, and that sets up this match. In reality, the reason for this match was twofold. Taker had been gaining popularity far quicker than intended. He was supposed to be top heel coming out of Mania. So when Macho was booked in the WWF title match, it left Jake without an opponent. And so Taker said, I'll do it. And so here we are. Mm. So this would have been planned from January. It just had to be expedited to set up the match. So the earliest they could do a kind of face turn was their only Saturday night's main event, which was in February. And here you go. Are you happy enough for that build-up?
As in your version? Yeah, it's great. As the actual build-up, no. It's fucking awful. Doesn't make any sense.
Mm.
So it's Jake the Snake Roberts versus The Undertaker with Paul Bearer. Did you see Jake jogging to the ring? When he gets closer to the ring, he just jogs. He little sprint. That's a jobber entrance.
Yeah.
or more likely, he's breaking character because he's off his face. Do you see when he sits in the ring and he just starts smiling? Oh, shit. Because him jogging to the ring, I've seen him jog to the ring before. Do you remember Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view?
Oh, God.
Where he starts wanking the snake and touching his own tits. He jogs down the ring as well. Ballooned out of his face. Anyway, so this is a pretty slow match. Taker no-sells Roberts' offense and takes control, refusing to be whipped into the turnbuckle. They get over Taker's character, that he draws power from the urn that Bear has at ringside. Jake counters a tombstone attempt, but with a DDT, but neglects to go for the pin, cueing Taker to do the Jason spot.
I love the Jason spots, and I love the fact there's two DDTs, couldn't put him down. But Jake wasn't selling the surprise at Taker sitting up twice. He just kind of turned around and, yeah, kick, kick, you know? At that point, Jake should have been a little bit kind of flustered.
Jake turns his attentions towards Bearer. Taker goes out to save Bearer, and Taker hits the tombstone on the outside. It's like, holy shit. Taker rolls the limp body of the snake into the ring, and yeah, that'll do it. 1, 2, 3, and Taker's streak is 2-0 at 6:36. And then afterwards, Heenan gets over the dominance and the cleanness of this win.
Yeah, really, really slow start. And Jake, you've got to be putting over The Undertaker because, I mean, The Undertaker's only going to kind of wander around the ring. And he just didn't do enough. You know, unlike Hogan in previous pay-per-view or two. So, yeah, really, really disappointing. It was quick, though.
It's a nothing match, really, to me. It does put Taker over strong going forward, but it means more looking back on it now because this is, you know, match 2 of 21-0. But other than that, yeah.
It's a shame they didn't get enough time to build to a pay-per-view match because you see the fucking mid-card with LOD and the Disasters. They've been doing that shit since Survivor Series. And Jake Roberts, big name. Undertaker, big name. Those two together, huge match, but it was just fast-forwarded from February. So kind of victim of circumstance and changing booking. Yeah, so this is Jake Roberts' final WWF pay-per-view. Sadly, this time, Jake was a full-on drug addict, and McMahon reminisced that he was one of those drug addicts who can hide it very well, but it kind of came to a boiling point here. And the other matter was that the EVP of WCW, Kip Frey, had offered Jake a deal. It was about $750,000. Jake held up Vince before the pay-per-view, saying he wouldn't wrestle unless he was released of his contract, so he could sign with WCW. And Vince was like, all right. But in the meantime, Kip Frey left and was replaced with Bill Watts, and he was in charge of WCW. Watts and Roberts had beef since his Mid-South days, so Watts got his contract and tore it up in front of him.
Oh.
None of that, mate. And he just lowballed him instead and offered him a third of that, about $250,000. And Jake took it. And with a parting shot, in order to secure his release, Vince made Jake Roberts waive the rights to his future WWF merchandise royalties.
Whoa. Yeah. That's intense.
And he must have been thinking when he was lowballed by Bill Watts, did he not think actually want to stay with Vince?
I think that you burnt your bridge, at least for the next while with Vince. Got no option then. And Bill Watts was like, soon after, the Snake Man would make his WCW appearance, attacking Sting. He'd have a short career there, leaving just months later. And then he'd resurface as a, well, legit born-again Christian in the WWF in 1996, citing Bible verses, which famously gave Stone Cold Steve Austin the impetus to spit out his famous King of the Ring speech.
Talk about your Psalms, talk about John 3:16. Austin 3:16 says I just whipped your ass.
Leaving the WWF in 1997, he was the sad subject of the wrestling documentary Beyond the Mat. And then he had a stint in ECW, the Indies, and in TNA, and now doing random WWE appearances. So as of April 2013, he's moved in with DDP, and through his yoga, he's dropped a ton of weight and looks to have gotten his life back on track, finally.
Well, fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, definitely. Uncharacteristically, we have both the Intercontinental Champion and the Challenger interviewed together backstage with Mean Gene. Probably since they're both faces.
Gentlemen, we have arrived.
We have arrived. You know, I gotta say, first of all, man, I gotta tell you how much I love your family. I gotta tell you how much I love your mom. I know this guy since he's been knee high to a grasshopper. I remember when they were changing your potty pants. I remember even when, of course, you weren't potty trained till he was 7, but everybody's got their problem. Remember tying bows in our shoes when we were kids? Yeah, of course, your shoes were always tied together. Doesn't matter to me, because I remember when Mrs. Hart used to come down that, she used to make them sandwiches, man, throw on that bologna. Of course, only one piece of bologna, but that don't matter. I was hungry. Then she'd come up and she'd go to her nose. What
keep
is
your
this?
Yourself.
Oh, keep my, oh, this is nice, huh? Here I am having a little fun trying to make you at ease, going to have a nice con to keep them to yourself, have a nice contest, and here you want to be a hero all of a sudden, huh? You want to be a hot shot all of a sudden. You want your belt all of a sudden. Is that the idea, huh?
Look, all I care about is one thing. I want to win back the Intercontinental belt. You got it. I'm going to take it. That's
you right. Keep your hands to yourself. Let me help you out a little bit, buddy. We can settle our argument. Oh, yeah, you damn betcha we can. Why do it here when I can have a million people watch me rip your head off?
Would have had you.
No, you wouldn't have.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen.
Bye-bye.
Bret Hart on
bye-bye.
His way to the ring.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This should be a classic, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think so.
Roddy Piper defending
not
against
today.
The challenger. Let's get back to ringside.
She be mine.
Please.
I thought this is Piper's best promo ever. I shot myself laughing at him.
I actually thought Piper was pretty good because I'm normally not a fan. But Bret was terrible in this segment.
What astonishes me is that Bret at the moment is on a crest of a wave like in WWF. But he still cannot cut a promo.
He's really bad, yeah.
Like as soon as Bret's turned to talk, you can tell he's like, oh, I don't want to talk, I don't want to talk.
He's just boring.
He's quite boring, yeah. Sorry, Jay.
He's lucky he's brilliant, though.
Challenger Bret Hart is out first, good, and he's facing the Intercontinental Champion Rowdy Roddy Piper, and legitimately, this is their first singles match together. Very much looking forward to this one. Piper's hot from getting outsmarted and thrown outside and spits at Bret. Classy. Also, heelishly, Bret feigns a shoulder injury to small package Rowdy, who slaps his face as a receipt. Did you see the massive Four Horsemen bedsheet in the crowd?
Oh, yeah.
It was great. The psychology here is Piper's playing mind games, but Bret shows he can too. Very evenly booked contest. Piper shows sportsmanship, holding the ropes open for Hitman, but then sucker punches Bret while he attends to his boot. I thought this was brilliant. It felt like one of those matches where you get more out of it every time you'd watch it. So Bret spontaneously starts bleeding, and I was like, oh! This is the pay-per-view where he pretends it was hard way. Because he just bursts open like Ric Flair, isn't he? Vince decreed a no-blading policy and would fine anyone that was caught blading. But since it wasn't caught on camera, he just said, no, it was hard way. Vince said, all right.
He's just nothing he can do about it.
But it was obvious that it was a play. Because he didn't get touched and suddenly he's got blah, blah, blah. It's like, fucking hell. Bret has a crimson mask. Blood stains the mat and on Roddy too. And it's really uncommon in the WWF and more so in the undercard.
There was a really terrible cross body to the floor. Typical Bret Hart, you know, he's grabbing onto every rope on his way down. So he literally, it's like a piece of paper slowly floating down to the ground. Just that's the only bad thing I can think about. And that's really nitpicking.
Cool. Idiot mat wrestler Piper slowly goes to the top, and obviously enough, he pays for it. Bret goes through his repertoire, which is a snap suplex, then a Russian leg sweep, then a backbreaker, but Roddy...
his backbreaker is gorgeous. It's perfect.
Yep. But Roddy shows Hitman into the ref, so this is the moment. This is a big internal struggle monologue moment. Throughout the match, we've seen Roddy resort to his heel ways, and Hot Rod grabs the ring bell to clock a defenseless Bret. So we see the conflict of Hot Rod desperate to win the match and retain his belt, but not wanting to heel out to do so. I thought that was just pretty cool. Also going mental on the commentary desk is Bobby Heenan. So in this face-face matchup, he has no one to really to root for. So he sides with who was ever heeling out at the time. So, like when Bret was playing possum, or here, when he shouts to Piper, hell, give the belt to me, I'll hit him for you. After much hesitance, Piper's conscience gets the better of him and he throws it away. And this decision is his undoing as Brett counters Piper's sleeper with the Series 96 finish, using the turnbuckle to bowl back over Piper and get the pinfall, winning the Intercontinental Championship at 13:50. There's one Roddy Piper fan in the audience and he knows the he can see the Brett bowling over and pinning him finish, because as soon as they get ready to do it, he's like, oh shit. And when the pin goes off, he's like, ah! And you can pinpoint the exact point where his heart broke. Yeah, it was an odd, quiet finish as the hush falls over the crowd as Face Piper presents Brett with his belt in a very classy display as Monsoon puts over both stars.
Pretty fun, sure. You know, Piper really got the crowd into it, and the crowd really helped. There's not much Piper can do, you know, like, it's just punch kick. But, you know, he can still get people involved in the match. And the reversal at the end was pretty awesome. But as you said, well, we've seen it before, or since, as it were. But it was not as good as I thought it would be, though.
I thought it was great. I thought the match was... I thought the match was very good. I thought there was great heat. Like I said earlier, not a Piper fan. This is probably my favourite match of his that we've watched so far. The finish was fantastic. And I enjoyed the, you know, kind of face-face dynamic to the match. Really enjoyed it. The best I've ever seen Piper. Good stuff.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. Definitely, they go through the gambit of, you know, brawling and trying to do a bit of technical, and both of them going through heel and face stints in it. And although both have respect for each other, they also say, I'm not fooled by what you're doing. I'm also a crafty mat technician or whatever. So I thought that was really pretty cool. So Mr. Double Countout does the clean job, passing the IC torch. Holy shit. Think about that. You've passed the Intercontinental Championship torch. Just like Miz passed the torch to Barrett. yeah, so these are pre-Cena days where mid-card belts actually meant something significant. That said, we do have the equivalent of these mid-card titles today. The Money in the Bank briefcase and the world title. They fill the roles of the mid-card championships because both Money in the Bank and the World Heavyweight Championship, they're singles accomplishments that mean that you'll from now on you'll be featured in storylines. They're going to do something with you, and they're just below the WWE title. So that's what the IC and US are supposed to do.
And that's the sign of a main eventer. Having the belt doesn't mean jack shit. It's if you're in a featured storyline every week, you're a main eventer. That's how I view it anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so fuck today's worthless US and IC title. They have no reason for being there. Actually, I'd go so far as to say they're actually a hindrance.
Oh God, sure. Barrett, Miz, Cesaro, who else has been killed by the...
SOS, something Jamaican.
Bollocks, he's terrible.
I was going to say, like, as long as you have the IC or the US belt, you are stuck in the mid-card, and you'll be lucky to get a match at Mania. Like, look at Jack Swagger. He didn't have a belt, but he quickly found himself in the 2013 Elimination Chamber match and the World Heavyweight Championship match at Mania.
Yeah.
But that would never happen if he had the IC belt or the US belt.
Yeah, and he's kind of on the same par, or was, as Barrett, you know. He just got a new gimmick, really.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more, Jay. That's a great point. And it's the progression of, you know, early 90s, mid-90s, even 10 years ago. When you win the IC title, you're going to drop it at some point, and then you're moving up.
Yeah.
And it just works so well, or it did work so well.
Would you say that the IC title was at its peak sometime early 93? That title change.
The problem was when Marty dropped the belt, they didn't let him move up that level that he deserved. That was the problem. Politics. Drugs.
What have you got next?
We got
the main event.
Your boy!
I think Steve should do this segment. It would be amazing.
Well, you see, you know I don't take many notes.
just tell us how you felt.
It's fucking awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah, so Heenan cuts to Lex Luger, the so-called next WWF champion. He slags off Monsoon, denoting himself as a heel, and he sides with Heenan. He talks himself up against a plethora of WWF bodybuilders, and Luger refers to something so quickly that tells us, this is live, they're pantomiming. So, Steve, what did you make of that?
First things first, he can talk, he's got the look, he can obviously wrestle, he must be able to, he's big and muscly, right? Therefore, he's the total package. What's his name? The total package.
I'll agree with you. He can speak.
Does have a tongue.
It's not very good.
What's wrong with it?
I've always thought this about him and Sid. I don't believe what they say. It feels like they're reading a script. And he's a terrible wrestler.
Well, we weren't to know at the time.
Well, that's true.
Well, he is a bodybuilder.
I thought it was a really nice surprise. I thought he did a great job. And he also drinks a glass of milk all in one go. I mean, who do you know can do that?
Most.
He did it on cue, then.
So, Jay, what's the story with the WBF?
Have been waiting about 7 episodes to talk about this. The WBF, World Bodybuilding Federation. So Vince has always had a massive chubby for grotesquely muscled, oily men in Speedos.
Here he comes, Jerry Stridham. Wow! Take a look at that! Top hat and cane. Talk about stepping out for a night on the town. Oh my goodness! Look at that mass! Holy cow! Ooh, look at this creation!
It's no small wonder why every wrestler at their peak in the WWF was also at their most largest, most ripped. In the bodybuilding world, the IFBB is king and had been for over 40 years. Vince booked an exhibition booth at the IFBB's Mr. Olympia contest under the guise of simply promoting a new bodybuilding magazine called Bodybuilding Lifestyles. But then opened the Trojan horse. He underhandedly distributed flyers for his own new federation, the WBF, the World Bodybuilding Federation. And then,
while being at
the...
Oh my god, you cheeky motherfucker, Vince.
So in a whirlwind of hype, flaunting money, payoffs, and VIP treatment, Vince unveiled 13 previously IFBB muscle men at a New York City presser in January 91. Between the magazine, the weekly TV show WBF Body Stars, and cross-promoting on WWF Superstars, it was all falling into place. Their inaugural contest would be that June in Trump Plaza, and here's where it all goes downhill. They hyped Lou Ferrigno, but they couldn't come to terms and Vince was left holding his lad. He never showed. The steroid scandal hit WWF in 91, where Vince admitted to experimenting with steroids at a time where the WBF was touted as being drug-free, which obviously the bodybuilders weren't. Then the sex scandal hit in 92. So, you know, there's a lot of things happening at the same time. Their version of Hulk Hogan, Gary Stridham, maybe he shouldn't have won the contest over some of the other competitors. So is this shit fixed, you know? And actually, more importantly, at its core, the contests themselves were awful. Critics panned Vince for gimmicking the contestants, giving them characters WWF style. And that was one of the main detractions of the XFL as well. So fans of bodybuilding wanted a pure sport, but Vince wanted to give them sports entertainment. So, trying to please both wrestling fans and bodybuilding fans pleased neither.
What's pure about bodybuilding?
No gimmicks. He's like, oh my god, look at the magician. Oh, he's going to pull one out of the hat. By July 92, after a year and a half and 2 failed contests and losing $15 million, Vince calls it quits on bodybuilding. Those 13 athletes were allowed to return to the IFBB the next year after being fined 10% of their WBF wages. Because, you left to go join this ruthless cunt over here.
Who ever thought that was going to make it to the mainstream? Like, bodybuilding, I'd imagine, like, even in the 80s, it was crazy niche.
Yeah.
No, like, really. Way, way more niche than wrestling would ever be.
I would imagine the only fans of bodybuilding are bodybuilders.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're in the fucking contest.
Well, only 13 athletes did sign, and the rest of them said, stay away from this. This is obviously short-term gain. Long-term, you're fucked. So the magazine stops, TV show cancelled, but you can still see the remnants of Vince investing in bodybuilding supplements, the Integrated Conditioning Program, the Ico Pro, and would continue to pimp it on WWF TV through to 1995.
You were my hero. Hero. You were my hero. Whoa.
But what about Lex Luger? What of him? As we mentioned in episode 24, when Flair jumped ship, Luger was their next main man in WCW. Jim Herd turned him heel and a racist, asking Ron Simmons to be his chauffeur. Worked out great for Triple H, so, you know. And when he worked his agreed number of dates in his contract, he just practically sat out the rest of his time until dropping the belt to Sting at Super Brawl 2.
Pay me, like.
Yep.
Nice.
Vince snapped him up for the WBF, and he also co-hosted the Body Stars TV show with him. Unfortunately, Luger never competed in the WBF as he was injured in a motorcycle accident, and by the time he recovered, the WBF has collapsed.
Fucking hell.
It's alright. A couple of months later, he joined the WWF roster, debuting at the 93 Rumble as...
The Narcissist?
As Narcissus.
And what was that? What he was called?
His name was Narcissus.
Narcissus.
That's a ridiculous okay. name.
And then they quickly changed it to the Narcissist.
It's like, look at how Greek this Polish dude looks. Yeah, that was a great little history lesson.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you're
I'm actually a little bit surprised that it wasn't a bit more successful because, like, you had the NWA, Vince kind of brought in all these cartoon characters and, you know, blew away everyone else. Why wouldn't it work in... WBF?
It's one of those things where... Yeah, exactly. Wrestling is a show and bodybuilding is a sport, apparently. So
it's not, by the way.
So, you know, no magician gimmicks.
You have to be good at something to for it to be a sport, you know what I mean? It has to be difficult, like, you know... Oh my God, Messi! It's Pele! Oh, Narcissus! It's fucking ridiculous.
Oh, God.
Virgil cut a promo on noses.
And then Duggan pronounces that there'll be no takedowns or go-behinds in this match. It's like, when have you ever done a fucking takedown or go-behind? Obviously that won't happen.
Outside the phony steam room mock-up, the Jobber Camp, the Nasties, Mountie, and the Repo Man can't wait to beat the face team, who are Slaughter, Virgil, Duggan, and the Boss Man. So we get TV's Family Feud host, Ray Combs, and he throws out a few jokes.
He was terrible initially, but a couple of his quips were pretty decent. I really liked the first one, for the Mountie. This is a man who doesn't know the meaning of the word fear. In fact, he doesn't know the meaning of many words.
That was the exact reaction of the crowd.
Well, I laughed.
It's a survey, and they also said that as a law enforcement officer, he does the work of three men. Curly, Larry, and Moe. The survey said...
The reason Ray Combs is out with these lads in particular is that the Nasties, Mountie, Brain and Sherry were on Family Feud prior to WrestleMania against the WBF lads.
I also like to point out that your man only cut jokes on the heels. That's racist.
Harley racist. We've got Slaughter and Virgil and Hacksaw and Bossman versus the Mountie and the Nasties and the Repo Man. I don't want to see it, but I'm glad they didn't split these wrestlers into two or three matches. They just lump them all together. Virgil has got a face mask. Well, it was just a kayfabe injury, actually, because it was supposed to be a broken nose from Sid, who threw him into an exposed turnbuckle. But holy shit, though, I'll splice it. What Virgil does is he throws his armpit into the turnbuckle. Nice. So it's not any part of his head or his forearm. It's his underarm that hits the fucking turnbuckle. Expect anything more from that lad. To kick us off, we get a quadruple clothesline. And we get a delayed sell by Nobbs from a Bossman cheap shot. Oh, did you like the wind-up windmill uppercut by Bossman?
Anything that winds up is way more powerful.
It's
physics.
Repo goes for standing whoopsies, a.k.a. seated sentons, not once, not twice, but thrice. But on the third attempt, the librarian turns and leaves his fist out for Repo's dick.
That's a blatant disqualification.
You ran into my fist, though. You know, you jumped into my fist.
Wrestling logic? Yeah, absolutely.
So he gave himself a package check.
Bossman broke out the V1 classic.
He did, did
that. Crescent kick. Did he miss this time?
Is it the one where Repo ducks?
Must be.
Suplex by Repo!
Whoa!
The law enforcement agent is in there now!
Amazing bit where the Mountie gets on the second rope, the best rope, and shouts, I am the Mountie! It's awesome.
That was my favourite part of the entire match. It was brilliant.
A nice reversal into a spinebuster heralds what was always going to happen, where the lads just get into the ring, all of you brawl, and it's all a big schmals. Sags hits Nobbs by accident, and Virgil picks up the win for his team. And I was like, stop, rewind, check who were the legal men here.
Oh god.
And it wasn't too bad, it was Mountie and Virgil. So although not on the legal man, having Virgil get the win doesn't bend the rules too much. But thank you, though. Anything to end this match. Mm. So
Sags hits Nobbs by mistake. Yeah. That's what happened.
With Virgil's mask, yeah.
Yeah,
a pretty nothing match. Felt like a European tour or a house show match, just so the fans get to see the wrestlers and nothing more. So
you get your tenner's worth.
So 8 WrestleMania paydays and 5 minutes 22 seconds later, it's all over. Do you guys have anything?
No, it's a waste of time.
We got exactly what we expected. So.
Yeah. Show me the Mooney. Backstage, Sean Mooney is with the WWF champion Ric Flair and his consultant Mr. Perfect, who teases having a poster of Flair and Liz. Hennig asks if he can join Flair on Space Mountain,
which is Flair's knob, basically, isn't it?
Or maybe he just wants to actually go on Space Mountain while Flair is banging Liz. Just waste a bit of time.
Maybe he always thought that Space, when Flair talked about Space Mountain, was going to Disney World.
They bring all these women on a roller coaster.
By the way, Space Mountain is the biggest letdown. Just,
really?
Yeah. Oh, it's really shit.
It was like really short and it jerked you around, but it wasn't pleasant, you know?
Yeah, it was just sore.
Yeah.
It was
like, just endured it, you know?
Imagine how the girls feel.
Hey! Because Mr. Perfect will be waving the fold-out of Liz and pal. She's all the way live! And then Liz, to top it off, you got one last shot, baby, at Space Mountain.
Can I come along with you this time, champ? Yeah. Let's go over to Gene Okerlund.
Outside Macho's locker room, Gene tells us that he's not been granted an interview. Fucking great. However, OC's boy, Lord Alfred, has much better luck. Macho's understandably upset about Flair and dedicates the match to Elizabeth. He's fighting for her honour. So fast forward to modern day, where we see the world title being defended halfway through WrestleMania. This means fuck off, Hogan is in the main event with Stid. I hope the crowd Sam Maggot. So, in how many matches has this been? You ask the question, how did this come about? Without spoiling the details of the main event build-up, Hogan says, I don't want the title shot, you're alright. And Tony went with, alright, who's next in line? Oh, Macho, would you mind? And he said, alright. After that, Flair started claiming that he dated Liz years prior to getting with Randy, and he had the pictures to prove it. wonderfully cross-promoting the April 92 WWF magazine, Splicey Splice. Flair and Perfect teased saving the best picture for last, a centerfold of Elizabeth, which they'll show on the big screen after the bout. That said, the WWF didn't take it that seriously, since prior to Mania, Flair and Perfect held a press conference to an empty auditorium and spliced the two scandalous PG pics. Amazing pictures, and who doesn't love Flair and Liz laughing with a horse?
I remember this storyline as a kid. It's one of my kind of favourite storylines from, you know, any kind of wrestling that I remember. Just the intrigue over what's Liz really doing. I mean, is she with Flair? Is she with Savage? Flair played it perfectly. Savage played it perfectly. The build coming into this pay-per-view is just perfection.
Flair makes his way to the ring as we see a nice Monday Night Raw neon light entrance archway we see for the rest of the New Generation era. It's cool, isn't it?
No.
Monsoon, holy shit. Monsoon gives us his biggest Wellio stop of his career. Woo!
You know, if you want to be fair to Flair, you gotta be fair and say that's a heck of a run. Only a man is fair as Flair would show up at WrestleMania. Wellio stop! What are you talking about? Yell at me.
Yeah, that's right, because it was from this match on where Heenan just went into fucking overdrive. He was amazing in this match.
So it is time for that part of the evening with the Macho Man, and time for what bar is he? Steve!
Right. I don't have an actual bar. Yeah, with the black and gold, what I do have, he can be a toffee penny from Quality Street or Roses.
Fucking A.
Or he can also be both the normal and the dark Ferrero Rocher.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yes. Glittery gold and black stripes. How about a caramel Magnum bar?
Very good. Or a pack of Super King Hundreds. What smokes are you?
Macho starts off hot as Heenan exclaims that Randy's emotions will cause him to make mistakes. Fantastic psychology there. And this immediately is proven right as Flair takes control after low-bridging Savage. Channeling his inner honky-tonk, Savage starts his comeback with a shake, rattle and roll. Oh, just notice they're moving very quickly and the bump like a boss for each other. You see, like, Flair does the delayed vertical suplex like Bulldog, and, you know, Macho is posting up high.
Yeah, he looked great. And Flair knocks Macho over the top rope, and it's like he shows Brett how to fucking take a bump over the top rope. It's awesome looking. And it's something I've never noticed up until today. When Ric Flair is doing stomps, he shakes his foot like The Rock does.
Cool.
Yeah, I never noticed it.
Macho's slam from the top rope is also very impressive, you see, because Flair would kick out his legs, so it looks great. After an elbow drop, Flair lightly hits his head on the barricade, like, well, he hits his hand off the barricade, and takes the opportunity to blade, and he goes, blah, 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 blah,
blah. Hey, camera, get a look at this.
The crowd are crazy into it. They're stirred up into a frenzy. They light up after a top rope double axe handle, well, first time we'll say that, by Randy, but it only garners a two. Savage hits his patented top rope elbow, but Perfect pulls out Savage before he can get the fall. In the tussle, Perfect throws Flair some kind of taped up brass nooks and nails Savage with it, but Randy kicks out a two.
His punch was amazing. It looked like he just jaw jacked him. Yeah, it looked spot on.
Why wasn't Flair disqualified for Perfect interfering in the match? He broke up a pin.
I think the ref is trying to fob off that somehow Macho Man decided to stop pinning Flair and left the ring. And
while he was looking directly at the incident.
So Savage kicks out a two and the crowd go mental. The blood, oh man, it looks amazing on Flair as it dyes his blonde hair. And shit, this, oh, fantastic. Everyone with blonde hair should bloody up, looks great. as I mentioned, WWF, no blade policy at the time, and Nate wasn't discreet enough like Brett was, and they caught him blading. Since it was obvious that it played into the match and the drama of it, so both Flair and Savage knew about this blade job. They were both fined. Both of you take a $500 pay cut. Which is insignificant to the amount they'd get for the Mania payoff. Flair nails a prone Savage with a chair, and as a concerned Liz comes to ringside, meekly ushered to the back by Dave Hebner, fashionista over here with a black suit and white fucking sneakers.
It's like you see these out lads, you know, walking in the park, and they'd be wearing like a, you know, tweed coat and, you know, slacks and big pair of fucking Nike runners. It was exactly like that.
It's like, I said formal suit. You have to wear a suit. You didn't say anything about my sneakers. Fucking carny. Not even Wurzel and a very young Shane McMahon can get her to leave. So they just, leave her be.
They just kind of crowd around her. No.
Flair slaps on the figure four for a long while. Perfect adds leverage from the outside until the ref catches him and kicks his hand free.
You love that, don't you, Jay?
This pisses me off every time I see it. I know it's great theatrically and you're trying to keep the flow of the match, but wrestling has rules. It is a sport, is it not? Or you're pretending that it's a sport. So when you don't treat it like a sport, it all falls apart. So if you see Flair and Perfect cheating, holding hands, you fucking count that guy to five and stop the match. You don't bloody kick his hand. It's that's just a ref getting some heat on himself.
Yeah.
Look what I'm doing. I'm part of the match now.
I told you, boys. Lego ref. It's his fault.
By the way, Liz, I think she came out at the wrong time. As far as I'm concerned, the figure four was on. There was enough heat going on in the match. He didn't need Liz to come down to ringside. You know, come down when there's a lull. She came right at the moment where the figure four was coming up.
It's like if she saw Flair putting the figure four, she knows that this is over, a match is going to lose his belt, and she comes out to give him the fucking oomph to fight on and push through it and all, but no, it's just Wurzel came out to throw it back.
Yes, so Randy takes more punishment until he counters with a punch and a schoolboy roll-up. And gets the three. The fuck is that? A punch and a roll-up? Alright, so we have a new WWF champion, but hang on, there's no music playing and Fink doesn't announce it just yet. Post-match, Liz gets in the ring to take care of Randy and Flair berates her, saying, what about me? What about me? What about other things in the future?
What about the horse?
He presses himself upon her and gets a few slaps for it. The officials subdue and irate Randy, but that just ends up helping Flair and Perfect to put the boots onto him.
It's amazing. Just retard logic here, isn't it?
It's like, you know, Randy was actually quite passive about it. He, you know, he wasn't like, get the fuck off me. He was just kind of lying there taking it. Could the officials not have just jumped up and grabbed Flair? No, just... Okay.
We have to hold down one of you. And we grabbed onto you.
And I'm sorry, Randy, but it makes for better TV when the baddie is not held down.
Just take it.
Fucking Wurzel, get on it, mate. This is your shindig,
mate. Big heel turn, the Wurzel heel turn.
We got it on the Silver Vision version, Coliseum Home Video. Did you guys get a smattering of a Hogan chant in the schmals?
No.
Alright, okay, that's just my version then.
Yeah.
Eventually they separate and Fink announces Randy as once again the WWF champion, pinning Flair in 1759. Cue Hulk Hogan coming out and putting Randy on his shoulders to celebrate. Yeah, I thought this was a storyline drama match, which is fine, but it was a bit of a shame considering they're two of the best workers of all time and they're both in their prime right here in front of us. They don't need this impromptu, obviously bullshit soap opera stuff. It went 1759, but I wanted at least another 10 minutes out of it. So what do you guys think of the match?
I loved it. I thought, even though it wasn't a match that I wanted to see going in, and I was a bit sad, you know, but once it got going, it's just Flair, lads. Up until this point, I thought that Macho Man was clearly the best wrestler in WWE in this era, and I just the past two or three shows we've done, finally starting to see what all this Flair talk is all about. He was just amazing. Absolutely amazing. And he bossed this match pretty much. You know, he was the one who kept it ticking. And I loved it. Great match.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the best matches we've reviewed. Fast paced, really hot crowd. You know, good storyline to the match, as you were saying earlier on, with Savage going balls to the wall and Flair capitalising. And, you know, also at the added intrigue of what's Liz going to do. You know, whose side is she on? You know, it was really good. I would have liked a little bit more of a tease from Liz, as in, even towards the end, she could have got on the apron, you know, Flair comes towards her, or Macho, or what's she going to do? Say she slapped Flair, schoolboy, or something like that. The end was a little bit of a letdown with the schoolboy finish.
Mm. Yeah. I was only thinking there, like, imagine how good this match could be if it was booked in kind of modern Mania rules with the near falls and the kickouts and stuff like that. It would have been absolutely amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I was a little bit surprised, you know, Macho didn't get his revenge after what's been going on with Liz. This should be the blow-off. You know, it seems like it's only kind of the start of the feud. And, you know, he kind of only won with a fluky schoolboy grabbing the tights victory. So I'm assuming there's more to come. But overall, it was really, really, really good.
I'm just waiting for Jay to say, and that's the last time we'll ever see Flair. Until 2002, or whenever he comes back.
Sadly enough, this is the blow-off of it. There's no Saturday night's main event. And so once again, Liz and Macho have their moment midway through WrestleMania. Even sadder, we never get to see the centrefold of Liz. That would have been nice. Doctored or not, you know. But WWF is PG, so I don't think we were going to get a big spread eagle from Big Jugs magazine. You know? So the following month, the May 92 magazine, we would get to see the original photographs with Randy and Liz. And I was like, oh man, fine Photoshop work with Flair. Back in 92 as well. Imagine the size of those computers you must have been working on.
Only the seven richest kings of Europe can own them.
A couple of questions, though. There is a picture of the Savages watching TV in their gaff. Like, who took that picture?
Where's that plugged in?
How could these allegations even start to be true if Liz is roughly the same age in the photos? Never mind her spending the last 8 years travelling in the WWF by Randy's side with Ric Flair in the NWA. So, you know? Never mind, kayfabe-wise, Flair just wanted to get him really angry to get him off his game. Even though this is a ridiculous assertion, he got really angry and put into a blind rage and made mistakes with it. So, yeah. Fucking worked.
No need for the world title in the match, you know, because obviously that was secondary. I suppose the only alternative was, you know, Hogan and Flair, Hogan to win, or Hogan and Sid and Hogan to win. So, better off keeping the belt away from Hogan.
All I heard was Hogan win. All of these permutations have the same outcome.
And I find it interesting that pretty much Savage's entire WWF career has centered around Liz. I mean, all, most of his storylines, you know, the whole together. Like, you never see that. You know, a valet essentially being like the focal point.
That's totally rare now.
Alright, so that is the peak of WrestleMania 8. And with that, we bring you to the ad break questionnaire. So the question for the ad break questionarium is,
which two wrestlers from this card are going to Space Mountain?
Soon, if you join the fan club, You get all that stuff for just joining?
All of that. Music cassette, autograph pictures, discounts on WWF magazines and merchandise, a fan club watch, WWF key ring, free tickets to a WWF live event, plus a special birthday surprise. Holy mackerel.
Which two wrestlers will go to Space Mountain? And the answer is...
Ric Flair and Perfect, we fucking told you 5 minutes ago.
Fuck's sake, lads, get on it.
I like that one.
And we're back. Backstage, indeed, with Sean Moody. The heel cronies complain that Macho cheated, holding a handful of tights. Flair says he'll regroup the brains, the money, and the nucleus. Which would you like to be?
I like Perfect's line about Macho saying he's a cheater like his old lady. It's quite nice, quite nice. Yeah, Flair good again, real kind of serious this time.
Yes, he says that beating him once means nothing and challenges Macho to do it again. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Man, yeah, nice build. To a match that doesn't fucking happen. What's that about? Throw to Mean Gene, who is with the new WWF champion. I was thinking, should be a part where I say WWF and he gets muted.
Yeah.
And that's what it's like watching the show. Throw to Mean Gene, who is with the WWF champion and his wife. He says taking the WWF title is only a piece of Flair and he wants the whole package next time. Savage pulls a Hogan, ripping his outfit at the end.
Yeah, his promo was nothing but just the Savage was awesome. And he was selling his leg very well too.
Instead of Yoda's with his
yeah.
This match is good, yeah.
That's not so sweet.
I take it you guys didn't get the WWF access clips.
We did, yeah. Oh,
bastards. I mean, tell me more. Jimmy Hart and Heels, the Nasties, the Mounties and Sherry sing and dance on stage. It looked amazing. And then we get a WrestleFest arcade tournament. Which looked pretty cool. Then a wrestler lookalike contest with the final two being Paul Bearer and the Big Boss Man. The Boss Man complete with nasty pit stains. And of course the winner was both of you. You're both winners.
This is like a double countdown, was it? Hey, fucking brawl to the back.
A sit-down interview with Hogan. Hogan says he's bored. He's fucking bored. Way to put over your match with Sid at WrestleMania.
I'm not tired. I'm not hurt. I'm just bored, brother. And once I get done with Big Bad Sid Justice, I'm going to be training with my little son, Nicholas, with Brooke watching, and then we're coming back after I get done with my next movie called Rough Stuff, and we're going after the WWF title.
Brett. Be back, Brett. Keep her warm, brother.
Brunch-wise, we see Martel in a Vince McMahon-style suit. Bloody Slaughter steals my quip. And he says, who dressed you, Vince McMahon? I was like, oh, fuck you. Did you get a second much seedier backstage promo with Macho Man?
Nope.
He was behind the scenes. The backdrop of a white cement wall, so it looks a bit dangerous here. But, you know, he's just backstage. He hops everywhere, and it gets a bit funny by the end.
God, that's really weird, because about 2 minutes ago, I made the point of saying, he sells his leg really well in that backstage segment.
Next match, we have Rick Martel versus Tatanka Buffalo. He's back, Martel, that is. The first singles match since the blindfold match with Jake this time last year. Now the model, he is in a neon cotton blue jacket and pink tights.
Yeah, he gives out about the fashion sense of Native Americans. And look at you, mate.
Not to be offensive, because that's not our MO.
Doesn't call them Native Americans. I'm not racist.
Oh, no, none of us are. But what I will say is...
That's great face there, Steve.
Some of these lads in Tatanka's entourage, you know, I don't want to drop a Friends reference, but he looks like the Holiday Armadillo.
What is the Holiday Armadillo?
Oh, you go and find out, Steve. It's just a big armadillo costume. Anyway, don't want to dwell on it, so... Yeah.
We won't then. Yes, he's facing the Native American Tatanka, who belts it down to the ring. Now, American War Eagle Tatanka was brought into the WWF under real name Chris Chavis in late 91. Prior to landing in the WWF, Chavis tried his hand at American football and bodybuilding. Heralding his TV debut on February 1st, the Fed ran vignettes of him around lakes and in the woods, playing up his legitimate membership to a Native American tribe. So, just FYI, Tatanka is Lakotan for bull buffalo. He's legitimately part of the Lumbee tribe of North Carolina. So much like Chief J. Strongbow in the 50s and 60s, and Wahoo McDaniel in the 70s and 80s, with Tatanka, it's time to go Native in the 90s. So, yeah, these lumpy Indian tribes in the front row, terrifying.
Were they lumpy? What makes them so lumpy? You didn't have enough milk?
Now, Mania debut, how about that? And Jesus, they start making some awful racket after Tatanka's finished his entrance.
They do a rain dance, but it doesn't work. They're brutal Indians.
You know, those Indians only got about 300 miles in their home from here. So what does that mean? They live in Cleveland. Never heard of the Cleveland Indians?
They come from North Carolina.
So instead of being thrown out of the ring, he should have done the pitching.
Who should have done the pitching?
Tatanka. But then again, if the Indians had more pitching, they'd be a better team.
Why don't you stop?
His jokes for Indians aren't funny either. He does the obvious... Hey, how are you? Do you know what I mean?
Hey, how are you?
No, you're not having that one?
No, come on, you can do better, mate.
How's it going?
We see Martel's dropped a good deal of mass. Oh, this is, steroid testing.
Nana 2.
It's hard adjusting to an opening level match after the WWF Championship match. This is just the same problem as last year when the emotional climax with Randy and Warrior came halfway through the show. Obviously enough, this is a showcase for Tatanka, big debut, but he sells for the vast majority of the match. I expect your debut to go a bit better. He gets the upset win with a splash and a tree count out of nowhere. There's no heat, and the fans give an almost sarcastic small cheer when announces the winner. And he tribal dances around the ring and scoots off into the sunset.
Nothing to say on that.
It's just the meanest of all matches. No one cared.
I was going to say something that Hoosier Dome was on an Indian burial ground. Terrible. You wanted a joke, yeah, I got one. Steve, Master of 93, how over is Tatanka going to get?
Tatanka?
Buffalo.
Yeah, kind of... Mid.
Jesus, blown us away.
I'd say kind of mid-card over. When he really takes off is, of course, you know...
In his 2006 comeback against Matt Hardy.
No, that was like 2006. Yeah,
the internet here.
He takes off in a big way when he joins the Million Dollar Corporation. There's a great storyline where it's like between him and Luger. And who's joined the corporation? And he's saying it's Luger. And it was him.
He's great in inverted commas.
Tanaka, he's...
a Japanese guy.
He never reached the heights that he shouldn't have.
So this is about perfect course, is what you're saying. So Chavis starts his WWF career with a win and would continue his own winning streak, which would last 19 months.
Oh, that's right, yeah, yeah.
To be honest, everyone does well when they're on a winning streak. The true measure of a character is when you're booked poorly. Veteran fans might remember his unmemorable run on SmackDown. Yep, 05-07, tagging with Matt Hardy and feuding with Sylvain Grenier, and went on a losing streak. Chavez makes sporadic appearances in the WWE, part of Vince's Rolodex when they celebrate a milestone or have an old school Raw.
In all fairness, he still looks great. What's he now, in his 50s maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he looks a good 10 years younger, like, you know, he looks well. He's terrible. He's never going to get over, but he looks
good. Do you remember when the Nexus were at their peak in, was it 2010? And he was saying, yeah, I'm going to be brought in, I'm going to do a big angle with the Nexus, yeah. And then the old school Raw came along and he was in a backstage segment with Oksana.
Doing a Goldust or something, wasn't it? Yeah. Then again, I'd rather be in a segment with her than with fucking Yip Yip, like Skip Sheffield.
He didn't say anything. He just came out of nowhere, started dancing and went back off screen. Mm. Like.
And it didn't rain again. Fucking useless.
In the boiled yellow locker room, new tag team, new WWF tag team champions. They're with a new manager, Jimmy Hart.
What the hell's going on here?
Yeah, so Jimmy Hart is with Ted DiBiase and IRS, and the mouth taunts the Natural Disasters. We've been saying that all night. What's this? What happened here? Well, we'll piece it together. Hart says he knows all of the disaster secrets. DiBiase says they don't have the funds. And IRS says, we're not taking you lightly, but we are taking you.
Yeah.
To Space Mountain, obviously. And then we cut to the Natural Disasters, and they shoot and slap each other until we cut back to the arena.
And they're faces now.
By default, you must be faces. Mm-hmm. What the fuck? So, since before Survivor Series 91, WWF have been building to Tag Champs LOD versus the heel Natural Disasters. At the Rumble, we were left with an inconclusive finish between the two as the Disasters won by countout. So, by the time Mania's rolled round, the now heel Tag Champions Money Inc. versus the face Natural Disasters. So, kayfabe-wise, Jimmy Hart sold the Natural Disasters title shot to his new tag team, the Money Inc. And this, by proxy, turned the Disasters face. The Road Warriors dropped the titles to Money Inc. on a house show, February 2nd, 92, Denver, Colorado.
I'm going to quantify this and say it's because they wouldn't job on TV.
Nope.
Ah.
Selling them short. Steve?
Drugs.
Bam-o.
Ah! A hawk!
Blammo. So, on TV, they delayed LOD's return match, saying that Hawk had a back injury, but shoot-wise, Hawk failed a wellness test, so he and, by proxy, LOD sat out WrestleMania. So the original plans would have been Road Warriors versus the Disasters and Money Inc. versus Slaughter and Duggan. So, man, good times for DiBiase and IRS. Yeah, question... more of a plea, and not so much a plea, more of a demanding statement. Tony, what the fuck is this? Andre can't buy the WWF title, but you can buy title shots. Mm. If that's the case, then shouldn't DiBiase have a title match every night?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, Brett gets a mulligan. How come LOD are figured out of a title shot? Mm. I bet it's because Natural Disasters asked first. Are you happy, like, they explained it kayfabe-wise? Gave you two reasons. Are you happy enough with that? Or?
Not really. It's a big step down. No.
So once again, you're not getting the match that they were building to.
Exactly.
Yes, it's the new WWF Tag Team Champions, Money Incorporated, The Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, and Irwin Orr Scheister with Jimmy Hart, versus the newly faced tag team, The Natural Disasters, Earthquake, and Typhoon.
I've got a new thing. Typhoon doesn't look like a bar, or a tea bag for that matter. I can tell you what he does look like. Darts player Andy Fordham.
He does.
Mm.
Andy Fordham. Isn't he the image of him?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
The faces overpowering forces the tag champs to regroup on the outside. It's a staple of the 80s where you get the hot start, heels regroup on the outside.
The best part in this match was like in the opening 10 seconds where Earthquake is going head to head with Million Dollar Man. And he, like, overpowers him a few times and then, you know, goes up and starts going, and starts, like, flexing his muscles. And it's like, I don't see anything, mate.
I suppose it's a comedy heel, comedy face thing to do, isn't it? Because you'll get a laugh out of the crowd.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure he doesn't want, he's not going for a laugh, like, yeah. You know. Cold tag as Quake and IRS tag in. Quake is still quite sprightly, but the future Shockmaster is fucking awful. He's so slow, yeah. And he can't wrestle, even for a big man. The Fat Lads look to make short work of Money Inc., but the heels intentionally get themselves counted out and save their title. So you know that this was happening, as before you knew it, the ref is already up to six. So for two pay-per-views in a row, the Disasters get a count-out victory.
What a cop-out, WrestleMania. I mean, you expect this kind of thing, a wrestling challenge. Fucking terrible.
Yeah.
At least we don't get this kind of crap anymore, you know. They kind of do the hand movement, just like, you know, walking away. Nah, I'm not having this, walk out with the belt. Nowadays, they wouldn't get halfway down the ramp. And
yeah,
grab.
People grab them, yeah. And throw them, yeah. Back in, yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that was strategic, because the big fat lads can't run out to grab them and put them back in the ring.
Yeah.
However, definitely not tugboat, anyway.
However, if you're the smaller wrestler and he's walking away and you try to grab him back and he just sits on his arse and I'm like, no. It's a double count out right there.
Yeah, by fucking the tag... Never mind. Mean Gene interviews one of the all-time greats, apparently, Brutus Beefcake, sporting a white tasseled outfit and a lovely Kentucky waterfall, his flowing mullet. He pledges his support for Bum Buddy Hogan, and in a wave of now sexual innuendos, he says,
"You know, the Hulkster and I, we've been everywhere. We've been to the top, we've been to the bottom. I've seen him down low, and I've seen him up high. But one thing, I've always seen him keep his dignity. I've never seen him drop his head. He's always held his head high. He's always been a giving man. He's given all of his life. And you know something, Mean Gene? I'm just here to add my voice to the rest of those 70,000 out there to make sure that he knows that we're behind him all the way. And regardless of whether this is his last match or not, I just want him to know that I'm behind him all the way. And I'm the number one Hulkamaniac. And one thing is for sure.
I'm going to get off by cranking your knob.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I thank you, Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Yeah. Let's get back to ringside.
I've seen Hogan on top and on bottom. He doesn't drop his head. He's a very giving man. I'm behind him all the way.
With the go-behind.
How are we supposed to take this any differently? He's the kind of man that will kiss you with his eyes closed. So, for the final undercard match of the night, it's the Rocket Owen Hart versus the No Entrance
Skinner.
Thank you. Eh? A singles match for Owen?
Yeah, where's Anvil?
He's gone.
He's in WCW, I'd imagine, is he?
He's left shortly after the Rumble, and he would bounce around Japan and WCW before coming back to the Fed as cheerleader for Brett and Owen in 94. So yeah, he's gone, and maybe he's probably too busy battering Jay Lethal in TNA. He had the,
oh, do you remember
the Lethal
God,
Legends,
yeah.
Challenge.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be the Legend Killer.
How many weeks did that go on
that
for?
That was like week one, and he lost the initial one, and there, it was like a couple of weeks. Three,
I think,
four,
like,
weeks,
they, so, lose to everyone though, right?
The Alligator Man spits in his face to blindside him.
Disgusting.
After a lovely shoulder breaker, the Skin Man hits his finisher, the Gator Breaker, which is the inverted DDT. It's an awesome name. But he only secures a two. Oh, fucking cheers.
Yeah.
Owen gets ready to kick out from two. So it's like, was it? It's just Kurt Angle that popularized kicking out at like 2 3/4. But it's like, it's just gone two, and he's like, yeah, getting ready to kick out. I guess it's better than the Warrior who gets ready from one with the hands up.
Yeah.
Rocket skins the cat. Monsoon calls it a power move. And Oklahoma rolled Skinner 4-3 in a nothing match. Went 109.
Yeah.
Yep. I have nothing to say about it. Move on.
I will say it was shortened, trimmed down from 6 to 7 minutes, but unfortunately the rest of the pay-per-view went long, so... Yeah, an easy day's work for both lads. Who'd say no to that?
Mm.
This is the final pay-per-view appearance of...
Skinner!
At 0 and 4, which is still 4 more pay-per-views than I thought he'd get.
0 and 3 and a bit, because this Tuesday in Texas, not a pay-per-view. Well, I suppose it was. You had to pay for it, but... You know.
To view it, yeah.
Every time. But, that said, the man who played him, Steve Kern, he'd be back on pay-per-view a year later at WrestleMania 9. And his time away from the WWF, he went to Clown College.
Doinky!
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, he comes back as a second doink that helps the original doink.
Yeah.
At WrestleMania 9.
Ah, very good, very good.
What do you guys have next?
Mean Gene interviewing Sid.
Yeah, so this is Coliseum home video exclusive. We get a horrendous 90s advertisement for the WWF fan club. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, shit, like, whatever's going to be in the ad break questionnaire, it's this now.
Next, of course, Sid cutting a Samoa Joe promo.
Which is?
Which is when he speaks quiet and then he gets angry and then starts to shout before going.
So he should have a live levelator, is what you're saying.
Yes, like me.
He's disrespectful to Mean Gene, so he's definitely a heel now. He's like,
no, shut up, you fat, bow-headed little oaf!
Very mean, and I didn't appreciate it. A typical shouty, wispy Sid, who decrees that he's the master, and Hogan is the learner. That young, plucky, bald-headed, four-time world champion. Learner. Both lads really hammer home teasing, but not explicitly saying, that this is Hogan's last match as a pathetic hook to get more pay-per-view buys. Yeah, so much like last year where it's like, oh, is Macho retiring? This year it's like, oh, is Hogan retiring? Maybe. We see video footage of the two biggest snake oil salesmen in the wrestling history, Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon. They have a disingenuous sit-down chat where they say nothing, McMahon ending it with,
well, then whether or not this is your last match, I'd like to say that on behalf of all of us, your Hulkamaniacs, thank you for the memories, thank you for the inspiration, and thank you for Hulkamania.
Thank you.
Size of Vince, by the way, at this point.
He's a big dude, yeah. Isn't he? Oh, no testing for non-performers.
No, right. Just
gotta mention that. Mm-hmm. Monsoon quips, there will never be another. Like the Hulkster in the history of our
Jesus. Can you imagine if there were, like, wear more Hulksters? The business would be gone.
There'd just be sandbags everywhere. Unfortunately, this promo, this, you know, Hogan just contemplating retirement regardless of the outcome of the match, this takes place of the traditional Hogan crazy coked up pre-match promo. And I was like, those were great.
Yeah.
Just talking about having Donald Trump on his back and he'll...
Oh, amazing.
Grab hold of the largest back in the world.
And then backing out. Oh, he was awesome. Coked out of his bin.
Allegedly. No.
No. He's just on coke.
Dr. Harvey Whippleman, denoted by his GP's bag, introduces Sid as it's time for the second half of our double main event. It's time for the main event! Weird, you guys got this halfway through the show, but I'm getting it now. It's Jack Tunney held a press conference to announce the number one contender to the WWF Championship. The top five guys were Undertaker, IC Champion Roddy Piper, Hulk Hogan, Macho Man Randy Savage, and Sid Justice. Sid foolishly assumed that since he was the last to be eliminated in the Rumble and had tossed out Hogan, that he'd be in line and preemptively stood up. But obviously, fuck you think, man. You haven't been here long enough. Golden Boy Hulk Hogan was chosen, and an irate Sid blasted Hogan in an interview straight after the presser.
Sid is cutting like a promo. He's reading notes, and he tries to rip his pages and can't. So he just crumbles them up and throws them away. Gets all angry.
Just on the fake press conference that they had, it was very funny when Tunney announced Hogan as the number one contender, and then you see all the journalists in inverted commas.
Fargo Boyle!
What?
That's nonsense!
The next week, Sid calmed down, apologised, and offered to tag with Hogan at the upcoming Saturday night's main event against Flair and Taker. Prior to the match, Mooney slighted Sid by gesturing to let him speak before turning to Hulk Hogan. Oh, it was great. I was like, this whole situation could have been avoided if Sean Mooney didn't start.
I told you Mooney was deadly months ago when he just laughed at me, boys. Foreshadowing.
Yeah, so Sid left annoyed and disappointed. It was like, man, Mooney, you turned heel on Sid first, man. He should have went the other way and just roughly shouldered Mooney as he left the screen. The match saw Hogan get beat down and build towards the hot tag to Sid, only for Mr. Justice to drop from the ring apron and leave, much like Martel did to Tito to break up the Strikeforce. When Sid gestured to batter Beefcake, who just returned to ringside to play cheerleader for Hogan, his heel turn was official. So Sid would walk out to a chorus of boos. He'd pick up Harvey Whippleman by his side, and he'd run through jobbers on TV.
Just the point on the promo package I showed him, battering all the heels and hitting the choke slams and stuff. For a couple of them, it looked like he was pretty fucking rough. Like, you know what I mean? Like the typical, I'm going to throw the jobber around and get over. I can't stand that. You can have Ryback kill people with the clothesline, but, you know, he can't do that to the stars. So you shouldn't do that, because then when he starts to fight to stars and people go, oh, that was shit, like, you know.
Sid went on the barbershop. Did you guys see this?
Yeah.
He threatened to beat up Beaver, but then proceeded to not attempt to even touch him and destroy the set.
Beaver, fucking little coward, like, just runs away, you know. You know, this guy used to be a wrestler, like, yeah, typical little Beaver. At the time, I still was a big Hogan mark, but I really wanted Hogan to batter Sid. Maybe he will.
What would be the most embarrassing thing that could happen to you when you trash the set?
You fall.
Fall? Or?
Powder on your face?
Blam up. So, when Sid smacked a shaving foam dispenser, it flew up and smacked him in the face, discharging foam all over his face. Oh, it was hilarious. WWF talked up rumours of this pay-per-view being Hogan's last. Buy the pay-per-view and find out. Or you can just
wait and see if he's on the show after.
Most people did. So it's Sid Justice with Harvey Whippleman versus Hulk Hogan with Brutus Beefcake in the main event. Monsoon says Sid is straight jacket material, as Heenan reminds him that he's called him Psycho Sid previously. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, they were pushing that a bit, yeah.
Sid enters the ring, and then we get Hogan's entrance, which is, oh, it's awesome. You get the iconic footage with the lovely roadie run going closer to Hogan. Then when it goes to him, they pan around, taking in the size of the crowd and the arena itself for the Hulkster. I thought, man, really, really impressive. It's at this point where I was like, this audio, it's definitely altered. Something bullshit is up here, because the commentators cut in and cut out, and someone's like replaced, press play on Sid's track and press play on Hogan's track. The theme song plays for an unnaturally long time as well, as he sends Sid to the outside punching him, rips his shirt and hot dogs, and the theme is still playing. What was it like on your...
Yeah, it was the same. So yeah. Do you think that was... It sounded like it was dubbed in, but...
What was the crowd reaction for Sid like?
Zilch.
What was the crowd reaction for Hogan like?
Big, but not huge.
Yeah.
Okay, because Sid got a big as pop as Hogan did.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, because it was literally nothingness. Complete silence.
So they replaced the audio here with...
Changing history. Jesus Christ, man. doing your fans such a disservice. Can we play What Barrows Hogan?
Steve, what bar is Hulk Hogan?
Get fucking ready. Right.
Wait, how many do you have?
I've got 8.
Jesus Christ.
But you know, he's like 27 shows in, I've never done it for him yet. Right? Number 1, Toblerone. Mm. Yellow red.
Mm.
Number 2, Crunchy.
Mm. Mm.
Number 3, this is a bit of a rare one, a Caramac.
Yeah, nice.
Mm. Mm. Number 4, Starbar.
Yeah.
Next, Mighty Munch.
Oh, cheeky.
Next, probably the most fitting out of them all, considering, you know, what he is, McDonald's. Yeah. And last, he's a can of Tennent's. That's 7.
He's quite like his... If his skin was a hot dog, then his outfit is like ketchup and mustard. Did you see Hogan and Sid? They repeat the spot where Hogan runs over Sid and sends him to the outside and waste a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That should just do the same spot.
Yeah.
You know we're in trouble when you've already gone back to the well. Fucking hell. Endless test of strength. Mm-hmm. And that, oh, there's another few minutes.
Which comes right after Sid going, fuck this, you know, I don't need to win the main event. Like,
are we working to Sid's ability here? Or are we making sure Hogan won't get injured for his upcoming movie? Or, yeah, with Roxanne. My, how times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
Don't get injured for your movie career. Mm-hmm. This terrible test of strength. That kills the crowd, by the way. Holy shit. Sid ends it with an elbow and follows up with a one-arm chokeslam. And Hogan jumps for it. Oh, it's fucking amazing.
Hogan's, I have it here. Hogan's selling is so great here. Like, when he wants to, he can make someone look like a megastar. It's just, he obviously chooses not to. It's so obvious because he's never done it before. Maybe, like, he looked, Earthquake looked great once. Other than that, that's about it.
Man, this is the greatest chokeslam sell of Hogan's career. Amazing. Or second greatest, coming after 10 years later versus The Undertaker. Dropping the WWE Undisputed. Slice.
Hogan then attempts to Hulk up as the fans go mad, but fails. Sid works him over again a bit more. Second Hulk up, but then Sid overpowers him again and maintains control.
Just fucking hell. It's my notes here. This match moves at a crawl. Sid slaps on an Ionian nerve grip and makes it a magna grip by squeezing his own wrist.
Yes. It's amazing, isn't it? Love wrestling.
Explain to me how a magna grip works.
In kayfabe?
In kayfabe.
Because you're clearly putting more effort and therefore it hurts more.
You squeezing your wrist makes your other wrists stronger.
Let's say you're squeezing this wrist so hard that you press down on the nerves and make this hand tense. How'd you like that?
Yeah.
Magna claw the shit out of him.
Because it's just the cumulative squeezing by you. Yeah, so magna grip, another few minutes.
Then Hulk Hogan's third Hulk up, which Sid overpowers again, hits a sidewalk slam, lifts Hogan up for a very impressive and what I thought was safe-looking powerbomb, which Hogan kicks out at a 2.
Yeah, 1.5.
Then we have Hulk up number 4.
No! Hulkster came out of there! I don't believe it! He's nuts too! They're both nuts! Hogan maybe is crazy! Justice! Look at the look on Sid's face now! The Hulkster has become impervious to pain! This place has turned into an asylum! Everyone here's lost it!
Cool, so Hogan hulks up. We get 3 punches, 2 turnbuckle spots, a big boot, a hot dog, big slam, big leg. And he goes for the pin, and Harvey knows what's up, but somebody missed his cue by a mile. So Sid kicks out.
Get that little creep out of there! Oh, that's fair. That's real fair.
Holy shit, yeah, this puts him over huge. No one's ever kicked out of the big boot, big leg finish. Hogan picks up Whippleman and the ref calls for the bell. A DQ in the main event of WrestleMania. Fuck off.
Like, I don't know why this was a DQ, because Whippleman didn't really do anything.
You'll have to wait for him to strike Hogan.
Yeah.
And then it's a DQ. Sure, yeah. Just coming in isn't a DQ. It's a five count.
Yeah, very good. So basically, the person whose fault all of this fuck up was is...
The Shango Tango. Oh my god, see you coming into the ring. It's Papa Shango. Oh, you've been jungled. Oh, I marked out crazy seeing this guy. He was far, far too late.
And then when Shango did eventually come out, he kind of like was wandering. It wasn't like pelting it down the ramp. He's just kind of like...
He's probably going, Vince McMahon's going to fucking murder me. I shouldn't have stopped for that haircut.
The gravity of somebody kicking out of the immortal leg drop wasn't really captured because it was just done too quickly and it just felt wrong. And
Everyone's looking at Harvey Whippleman who just got up on the apron.
Blocking the hard cameras. Yep. Yeah, it's just commentators really don't say anything about it.
But the focus wouldn't have been on him anyway, because it would have been on Papa Shango then, right?
The very fact that he had to kick out, because he did have to kick out.
Yeah.
The very fact that he had to kick out, they should have made a big deal about it.
Yeah, yeah.
They could have done something with that, but they couldn't because it was just a complete fuck up. So
because they were planned not to say that. Yeah. So basically, it just makes everyone look like a bit of an idiot.
Exactly.
Like.
Yeah. So instead of Papa Shango getting the heat for causing the DQ in the main event, they give to Sid, and Sid gets the heat for kicking out of Hogan's finisher, which is pretty big. But it's all nulled and muted because we're all looking at Harvey Whippleman because it was a botched finish. Hooray, Mania! Yeah. is there a DQ earlier in the night where someone had to come? Oh yeah, like Liz came out far too early. You're saying when the figure four was put on Macho by Ric Flair, she comes out far too early. But better early than late.
Yeah,
definitely.
Because
don't answer. Where the fuck are you, Vicky?
German again.
The heels get the heat until. But that's a managing Eddie! Holy fucking shit!
Huh? The Warrior song sounds quite like the Rockers.
Oh yeah!
Marty's in the main event! I knew it! I told all of you! Warriors theme hits to make the save. Holy shit, the Warrior is back! Of course, Hogan doesn't need it as he saves Warrior by disarming Sid.
And by the way, when Warrior came out, I didn't think he got the reaction that he deserved. I think it was probably because the crowd were so stunned at what the fuck just happened in the ring. The play should have gone fucking mental when Warrior came out.
So the Warrior, the damsel in distress. So it's definitely the Warrior. It's definitely Jim Hellwig, you know, because... But he is...
He has a lovely new haircut, the boys, bob. Doesn't he? It's lovely.
Yeah.
All the TVs have them, yeah. He's dropped a ton away. He looks to be on an off cycle. You know, this was like, is this really the Warrior? Or did you get someone else to play him, you know? The two celebrate in the ring. And by that I mean Warrior mimics Hogan's grandstanding.
Bad. Hogan wasn't too happy either, having to share the ring of Warrior. At one point, Warrior was kind of like... You know, pointing to one side of the crowd, let's do our thing over there. And Hogan just fucking blanks and goes off to the other side.
Fucking children there.
We do get some cool in-ring pyro and fireworks to end the night. I did like that.
I have sparkles go off and we're out.
Yes, the crowd quickly piped down as they realised they've been fucked over for a decent main event. And WWF shoot an angle for a tag match that'll never take place. Good night, Springton. There will be no encore.
Wonder Brain! This is the Gorilla saying, so long, everybody! I'm getting out of here! I don't know what's going to happen! Run for your life!
You have entered the dark world of Papa Shango. You have stepped into my black circle. And that circle, it's closing on you.
All right, so Papa Shango, Charles Wright, Mr. Tango himself, in from the USWA at the behest of his good friend The Undertaker. He was signed and debuted as Sir Charles in 91, but was repackaged in February 92 as the Awesome Voodoo Practitioner with a bachelor's degree in something D-O-O economics. He brought a skull that would bellow smoke, and trick staffs that would either shoot sparks or light up, and had supernatural powers like altering the arena lights and making people vomit or emit black treacle.
And making caps emit a black treacle.
It was all very campy, but 100% amazing.
I have fond memories. Don't know what the fuck he was doing in this match, but yeah, he was really, really cool. A former day booger man, if you will.
Fair enough. Yeah. Yes, he came out at the end of Mania 8 to establish him as a top heel. Wright mentioned last year that he was supposed to headline in SummerSlam 92, tagging with Sid versus Hogan and Warrior. What do you think they'd do? But thanks to a spoiler, Sid is gone. He was left to fend for himself. He was fed to Warrior and discarded when something better came along. So, although short-lived, the character would be dropped midway through 93, his initial feud with Warrior putting a spell on him, causing to convulse and vomit and treacle with his cap. I thought it was fucking awesome at the time, and I still do.
One of the best segments of the kind of early to mid-90s, you know, just that and the barbershop are the two big angles from the 90s that even non-wrestling fans will bring up every now and again.
The future Godfather also mentioned that the Kane character was an updated Papa Shango, but they decided to put him in the Nation instead. And Steve, I like this, he recounted how he almost went to WCW and named his price, but the deal was detracted and late in the day when they found someone to do it for a third of the price to be the kind of enforcer of the NWO. That man turned out to be
Vincent.
Yeah. Because
I said that as a joke, by the way.
Yep, Virgil, because he wanted to be back on TV so bad, and says that dumb motherfucker cost us both. So, yeah, Sid is done with the WWF. Reasons are twofold. One, Sid threw a huge strop after losing to Warrior on the house show circuit, claiming Warrior was an awful worker. That's fucking rich. And also that he was going to be suspended after the post-Mania European tour for failing a drugs test and alleged test tampering. So he went on the tour and then he quit before he was suspended. In any case, he's gone from the WWF and would return to WCW the next year at Slammery 93.
That's it.
Gone, yeah.
He'll be back.
And then gone again. And then back again.
Liz is done with OSW Review as well. After the European tour, she said, I don't want to be on the road anymore. I'm staying at home. Randy's got the belt. And he says, I'm going to stay on the road while I've got the belt. And in a few months, they divorce. So, sad about Liz going?
Yeah. But at least it gives Savage something else to do, you know? She served her time. She was great. But, you know, move on, Jay.
Me personally. Alright, so that finishes the pay-per-view with more questions than answers. So, Steve, what did you think of the pay-per-view?
Overall, I thought it was an above-average WrestleMania, considering most of them haven't been that great. I was very angry and bitter by the card changes, and that really did kind of dampen the entire show. But I still thought that the show looked great. I thought that the crowd were fairly good, especially in the main event. But, you know, obviously that's sound sweetening, so that can be a bad point as well. I enjoyed the opener. I thought HBK looked good, and Tito was okay. I really enjoyed the Intercontinental title match. It was some of Piper's best promo work and in-ring work. I thought the Flair macho match and promo. was fantastic. I didn't enjoy the finish of the match, but overall it was a definite positive. And I enjoyed the build-up, especially the promo package to the main event. And I thought it was amazing to see Hulk Hogan lose, but I didn't enjoy the overbooked schmaltz ending and all the run-ins and stuff. Some of the bad parts, like I said earlier, the sound sweetening bugged me. Luger's promo, just in general, he's awful. Fuck Luger. The eight-man tag and the Martel against the Tonka match can fuck right off. But I don't think it'd be fair for them to bring the entire show down. It was 10 minutes of wrestling. Owen and Skinner, waste of time. And just Hulk Hogan in general is bad. Overall, it was, yeah, I'd say like a 6 out of 10 show.
Cool, cool. So the main talking point about this pay-per-view is what you thought was going to happen. What was basically promised at the Rumble and what we're getting at Mania. Two different things. So it really does mar whenever they do. But just going pay-per-view to pay-per-view, it's like, what the fuck is this? Why did you bother building to all of these matches to not do them?
Yeah, like, maybe if you watched every TV show, you know, from Rumble to Mania, you know, you might give it, like, a 7, you know, because the changes don't bother you. Mm. But, yeah, it bothered me.
Yeah. Well, the original plan, obviously enough, was Hogan versus Flair, with Hogan winning the belt. But thanks to Hogan now definitely leaving after Mania, and Hogan and Flair not drawing as well as Vince would accept on house shows, by early January, he changed the plans to what we have here. Vince says, like, with Hogan leaving, he can't win the belt from Flair, because he won't be around to defend it. And Hogan is certainly not jobbing to Flair. So the compromise is the schmaltz ending, what you see here with Sid and the two run-ins, and Flair and Macho stealing the show halfway through the pay-per-view. Yeah, bollocks. Oh, one of our fans, Daniel Lister, mentions that Tito puts over HBK, Piper puts over Brett, and Jake puts over Taker. Three stars of the 80s put over the future of the 90s. So from a mid-card perspective, WWF doing great. They're the future, that's great, but what about the main event right now? Like, it's all turmoil, short builds to diverted feuds, and that killed the show. As mentioned at the end of the last show, we didn't get proper pay-per-view payoffs to LOD Disasters, Sean Marty, Jake Macho, or Hogan Flair. And that's the whole fucking up and down of the card, really.
Mm-hmm. That was a great point about the mid-carders putting over other mid-carders, but there's an upside about it. It's three mid-carders who never became main eventers putting over three people who became three legends. So, like, big fucking thumbs up there overall for, you know, the overall company.
Mm.
Great stuff. Hogan.
So I just want to go through what did and didn't happen at pay-per-view, because the pay-per-view felt very disorganized. Too many matches that didn't happen, regardless of how far in advance it was planned. Some of it's WWF's bookings problems, some of them not. So Sean versus Marty didn't happen. Marty got arrested for cocaine possession. LOD versus the Natural Disasters. Hawk failing a drugs test. And with that, it also cancels Money Inc. versus Slaughter and Duggan.
Yep.
Thank you. Bulldog versus Berserker was pulled for time constraints. And obviously the main event matches were changed. So it was originally Jake versus Macho, which was moved to the Saturday night's main event prior. Flair versus Hogan, which is just dropped completely. Which leaves Sid versus Taker, which is dropped. And see it, Mania 13.
Brett.
Alright, so we got some pretty big news here. Tornado left before we could say goodbye. The Warlord closes the door. Piper would not wrestle again on pay-per-view for over 2 years. Marty Jannetty was fired. Jim Neidhart left. Sid quit before he could be suspended. Liz was sick of life on the road. Sergeant Slaughter heads back to boot camp. Skinner retires to the Alligator Swamp. And Jake Roberts slithers to WCW. It's the final WrestleMania for the Monsoon and Heenan commentary team, and it's our last WrestleMania Stadium show for over 9 years. But one more big name is gone. Hulk Hogan. Amidst huge backlash from his lies on the Arsenio Hall show, WWF steroid scandal, and the sex scandal, causing so many wrestlers to leave, Vince's empire was in a major downturn. The Hulkster bailed on the WWF sinking ship, and would not return until the heat's off at WrestleMania 9 next year. by which time the company would be completely different. And with the close of this show, this is the end of the Hulkamania era. The era can't continue if he's not around. So after 25 straight pay-per-view appearances, Hulk Hogan is done. Which means we're done. Our chronologically critiquing the Hulkamania era is over. But this is not the end of OSW Review. We'll be moving on to greener pastures. But let's visit 1992 one more time and see the first WWF pay-per-view without Hulk Hogan over this side of the Atlantic with SummerSlam 92. Yeah, so what do you think, Steve?
Okay. It's been interesting. There's been dizzying highs, terrifying lows, and creamy middles. Yeah, it'll be good in a way to see the back of Hogan, but I mean, without him, we wouldn't be doing this show.
Absolutely.
So you got to appreciate what he did for the business.
I fear for the company's fortunes over the coming year.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Mark Summers, and welcome to the messiest wrestling event in history. It's Super Sloppomania, and I'm extremely excited to be able to introduce this gentleman to my right, a name that needs no introduction in the world of wrestling, play-by-play man for the World Wrestling Federation, Gorilla Monsoon. How are you doing? Nice to see you here. Glad you could be here. Now, I'd like to know what the toughest part about broadcasting on the WWF is.
Toughest part of it for me is having to deal with that weasel Bobby DeBrain Heenan. That's the toughest part for me.
I can understand that. I think that... Oh, look at this. He's here, ladies and gentlemen. The weasel is here. Oh, look at this. What a klutz. What a klutz.
From the parking lot?
What do you mean?
Why don't you start down here with everybody else?
Because I'm the host. I make a grand entrance.
Wait a minute. I'm the host. You guys are...
the host.
You guys
are... I'm the host.
We're going to find out who's the host after this as Gorilla challenges Bobby DeBrain to a cage match.
You got it.
On your mark, get set, go!
It's a cage match as these two WrestleManiacs toss chocolate-covered chickens to their partners. Whoever holds on to three birds first will put a sleeper hold on the lead with $20 and control of the most hammerlock show on TV.
Bobby DeBrain got control. They did it. Bobby DeBrain. Let's go. Happens. On your mark, get set, go. Get that stuff off. And the first team, you got to get your shorts off too. The first team to get your shorts and your glasses and your robe over. Who's gonna do it? Yes. Well, we know Dave is physically fit, and we have a great audience here. Let's see if this wimp can really do what he says he can do.
He's a good kid.
He's a good kid. We're talking about you. On your mark. Get set. Go! Go, Bobby DeBrain! He's having a quick time through there. We're down to 56 seconds. Grab that flag and pass it on over to your partner. There you go. Hunting back is obstacle number two. There it is. Grab that flag. Get out of there, Bobby DeBrain. You're holding your kid up there. And get it in a toothpaste number three. Pull that off and find... There's the flag. There it is. Find it. You go over to the kid farm number four. They're moving quickly. We're down to 37 seconds. What's going to happen here today, folks? Well, I think we may have a winner if they continue at this pace. We're down to 31 seconds. Obstacle number four. This is the halfway point. Obstacle number five is coming up here. And going on through. He's going on through there. On obstacle number five with 21 seconds. He slowed things down. Where's your partner? Where's your partner? He's over there. Gorilla's holding him. Gorilla Monsoon is holding your partner down. Bobby's over here. He's holding your partner down. Patrice, come on out here. Come here, Dave. Patrice and Dave, I'm calling a foul. You both win the grand prize. Both of you do. Congratulations. We got it. Listen closely. Harvey will tell you everything you've won.
Well, Mark, they're both going to get to the soundboard, the KB Gibson certificate, the camera, the language master, the Casio, the Gibson guitar, the piano. They're both going to San Diego. It's a prize package of over $5,000
each. $5,000
each.
How do you feel about that?
Fine.
How you feeling, Patrice? All right, Gorilla, come on over here. Hey, what happened here, Bobby?
I won. I got my flag.
No. It was called a foul because Gorilla stopped your partner over there. The match is over with.
No,
but
no.
Join us again for Super Sloppomania 2 here on Super Sloppy Double there. We're going to do it again. Go ahead, guys. Dive on in if you want. Thanks for being with us.
Where?
No! Not for me. What do you think? Do they got you going? What do you think?
So, episode 27 is in the books, lads. Good show.
Excellent.
All right. Oh, very good.
So next time it will be SummerSlam 92 from Wembley Stadium in London, England. So it's a goodbye from Mr. OC.
Hey.
And V1
Raptor.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you.
No.
No.